And we're reading from Paul's second letter to the Corinthians, beginning in chapter 8 at verse 16. And then we're running on into chapter 9 up to verse 5. So 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 16. And Paul writes, "I thank God who put into the heart of Titus the same concern I have for you. For Titus not only welcomed our appeal, but he is coming to you with much enthusiasm and on his own initiative. And we are sending along with him the brother who is praised by all the churches for his service to the gospel. What is more, he was chosen by the churches to accompany us as we carry the offering, which we administer in order to honour the Lord himself and to show our eagerness to help. We want to avoid any criticism of the way we administer this liberal gift, for we are taking pains to do what is right, not only in the eyes of the Lord, but also in the eyes of men. In addition, we are sending with them our brother, who has often proved to us in many ways that he is zealous, and now even more so because of his great confidence in you. As for Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker among you. As for our brothers, they are representatives of the churches and an honour to Christ. Therefore, show these men the proof of your love and the reason for our pride in you, so that the churches can see it. There is no need for me to write to you about this service to the saints, for I know your eagerness to help, and I've been boasting about it to the Macedonians, telling them that since last year you in Achaia were ready to give, and your enthusiasm has stirred most of them to action. But I am sending the brothers in order that our boasting about you in this matter should not prove hollow, but that you may be ready, as I said you would be. For if any Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to say anything about you, would be ashamed of having been so confident. So I thought it necessary to urge the brothers to visit you in advance and finish the arrangements for the generous gift you had promised. Then it will be ready as a generous gift, not as one grudgingly given."
Well, last week I went to IKEA, and whilst there, we had a look for some leather sofas for the cafe, and it can be hard to tell whether leather is really genuine, whether that leather is genuine. And apparently the way to identify it is either by smell or touch, as you can't replicate the smell of real leather, and if you press on it, apparently if it's genuine, then it should become wrinkly. As with synthetics, you can't replicate that wrinkly appearance. So Paul in these verses is saying, to get an indication of whether someone's heart and lives are genuinely being changed by God, then look at their bank statement. So if we want to see how grace has changed our lives, Paul says we should look at our bank statement. But why is that? Well, Paul is writing to the Corinthians, a wealthy church who have previously pledged to help churches in Judea who are in need. And Paul is saying, prove your love for Christ and what he has done for you in Jesus by being generous. Give what we can in response to grace to help grow God's kingdom. Well, the largest offshore wind farm in the world is just east of London, and it's called the London Array. It's got about 175 turbines, and it's about 20 kilometres offshore. And what is notable about wind farms is how the input is invisible. We don't see the wind that powers the rotor blades. It's invisible. But we do see the output as the blades turn and create power, which is noticeable for those that benefit from it. And this is a bit like how grace should work. So God's work of grace in our hearts is invisible, but it is seen in the visible works of grace in our lives as Christians. So we make God visible through our works. But how do works get noticed? Well, if we are generous. So if you take one thing from this sermon, that this is it, that you should try to make God visible through your generosity. So God is invisible, but can be seen via our generosity. Grace produces generous works, which glorifies God. And tonight the verses are going to challenge us to think about how generous we are with our money, and also the wider picture of generosity with what we have. So generous giving is born from a heart touched by grace. We don't work to produce grace. It is given to us as a gift by God. And if we live our life by grace, then we should tangibly see evidence of it in our lives. And we're going to think about this further for a few moments this evening. And we're going to think, here's a quick preview about these three headings of where we're going. So be accountable for your giving, be generous in hospitality, and lastly, be ready to give. So firstly, being accountable. Well, how would you feel if another Christian saw your bank statement outgoings? Are you a good steward of your money? Paul is writing to the Corinthians, asking them to be good stewards of their money. And that is to be accountable for what they do with it and how they use it to support mission work. And why is that important? Well, because if we manage our money wisely, it then allows us to be generous. And this can help build relationships and grow God's kingdom. Generosity helps build friendships, as it shows life isn't just about me. My money is not there just to serve me. Generous giving can help others in need beyond our borders. So locally, it can help build connections with friends and the community, which may lead others to Christ. And as a Christian, we are held to account for how we use our money for the broader gospel work, beyond what happens in our local church. We can't think, if it's not to do with this church, then it doesn't really affect me. And in the same way, Paul is reminding the wealthy Corinthians in Corinth, Christians in Corinth, that they were accountable for the financial support of needy churches in Judea. The context of Corinthians is about Paul writing to a church he previously set up there because he has heard it was having moral problems due to false teachers amongst the people. So Paul wrote 1 Corinthians in response to the issues, but it was unsuccessful. So he then visited in person and then later wrote a more severe letter delivered in person by via Titus to reconcile. And this worked, and the rebellious false teachers were outcast. So the church was now open to Paul's counsel. So he then wrote 2 Corinthians in response, as the relationship is seemingly restored. And Paul writes in these verses to appeal for the church to complete a collection for the poorer churches in Judea who are in need. Now, the origin of this financial need in Judea stems from Galatians 2, verse 10, where the apostles asked that Paul and us today should remember the poor. And this fund being built up to help the churches in Judea teaches us about the relationship between money and the gospel. So why is this collection such a big deal to Paul? Well, because the money being collected was about more than money. It was about relationships and how the gospel should shape them, about how Christians relate to each other, how a wealthy church should relate to poorer churches or other ministries in need. So the Jerusalem church in Judea is poor, Corinth is wealthy, and they have previously agreed to help. So Paul is simply writing to them to remind them for the need for them to be accountable for this wider gospel mission and to help out the Judea churches. And Paul is making careful arrangements in order to collect the funds raised. so that he and the church can be accountable. So Paul wants to see that any giving is handled wisely in the eyes of God and of man. And Paul doesn't want the gospel to be damaged by any misuse of money. So he begins by informing the church he is going to send Titus, who is part of his ministry team. Now, Titus will be familiar to the church, having delivered the previous letter, and also for being a famous preacher of the gospel. Now, if you read this in Corinth, you might think that Titus is going to visit them just to put pressure on them to give. But look down at verse 17 and note how Paul delicately says Titus is not coming on his own initiative. Sorry, he is coming on his own initiative so as not to seem like he is putting force on the church to give. So Paul wants the church to see that there is no undue force being applied. So he says in verse 23 how Titus is one of his ministry partners, which connects with verse 16 about how he has the same concern for them as Paul, as they are part of the same ministry team. So Paul is really concerned about this gift to other churches. And it seems very sensitive due to the context of what has happened before in relation to this church. So he's going to every effort to show them that Titus loves the Corinthians. And verse 17 shows Titus really wants to be there. Paul could have just sent an assistant, but instead it's Titus who is really motivated to visit this church. And why? Well, because he knows what it could do for the gospel work in Judea. So he's trying to role model the eagerness to the church, the eagerness to make sure any church project is handled financially wisely. Well, as Titus is eager to visit and collect these funds, so too the church should be eager in trying to raise them. And verse 18 shows how the person accompanying Titus is known for the gospel work. However, he's not named to show how Titus has responsibility. And this other man is likely to be from Macedonia, which is another area needing to benefit from the funds. And this is simply added as a detail to add credibility to the project, as they're doing everything they can to act responsibly with the money. And it's a sign that Paul is trying to be organised with his ministry planning. He doesn't want to create this grand project of helping Judea churches, but for it then to fail due to poor supervision and bad delivery. And this then raises the question with our own church growth projects as to how we should best manage and deliver them. So are we taking steps to be responsible, to be good stewards of what God has given us, and to think through how we can show generosity through these projects? Well, money is always a sensitive issue with most projects, and so Paul, in verses 19 and 20, reminds the church that this fund is being created in order to show grace to these churches that are in need, which in the big picture is all about honouring the Lord with our money. And that's why in verse 19 he says, Titus is being accompanied to help give the project's integrity. And so in our lives it reminds us of the need to act with integrity with our money in order to be a good witness. With anything money related, our integrity and any gospel opportunity can be ruined if we seem in any way to be dishonest. So we should take steps accordingly to be transparent. So to show that he's trying to be honourable with the money, he references Proverbs 3 verse 4. So then you will win favour and a good name in the sight of God and man. And he wants his motives and actions to be an open book for God, who scrutinises all we do. He does not want to do anything that will be deemed as scandalous. So verse 21 is the key verse from this section, as it shows how the gospel is scandalous to people. They can be offended by what Jesus says. However, our behaviour should not in any way dishonour the Lord or people around us. How easy it would be to undo the work of the church and relationships built in this community by a financial scandal. To avoid any signs of corruption, we should bend over backwards to be transparent as the gospel is at stake. Well, how would your actions fair in the eyes of the Lord and of men. Well, Paul is concerned primarily about the mission. He wants to do what is right so that he can be accountable and to highlight how we should take accountability for other Christian projects beyond our local church if we have the funds that can support them. So be accountable for your money. Use it wisely and for the spread of the gospel, and see how generous God has been through Jesus' death, and use your money generously for God's glory. Well, the Olympics is underway in Rio, and at the start we had this huge opening ceremony which is designed to welcome the athletes. And then during the tournament, the host does everything they can to make it a great experience, because they know that being a great host matters, as it shows what the country values and that they care. And Titus and the Macedonian brother are on their way to collect this fund. So Paul says to the church they should be generous in their welcome and hospitality to reflect their great passion for the gospel. Just like Rio, who is passionate about hosting the Olympics, so too the church should be passionate about the impact of the gospel in their lives and reflect this in their hospitality. Well, Titus is a famous preacher and he's on his way to Corinth and is excited. So Paul says to the church, live out the gospel. Look at verse 24, it says, show these men the proof of your love. He wants the church to show their love for the gospel by helping the men when they get there. Well, why is this important? Well, it shows the fruit of the gospel. It shows how the gospel can change hearts and produce works. Works which have an impact on others. Works which aren't all about me, about what I want, about my comfort and desires. It's about serving wholeheartedly because of the invisible work of grace changing your life. Imagine if a famous preacher like Tim Keller came to visit our church. He was really excited about our work. He'd heard about it online. And when he gets here, he finds we aren't hospitable. We didn't give him dinner or give him accommodation. We just said book a hotel and eat at the local pub. What would it say about our faith? What would it say about the impact of grace on our lives? Has grace changed your life enough to be sacrificial in hospitality? This project is very important, and Paul wants everything to go really well. So again, he is sending someone else. Now, note in verse 22, which references another person referred to as our brother rather than the brother in verse 18, who was the Macedonian. And this new person is a well-known long-term companion of Paul. And why is he including him? Well, it increases the accountability of the project even further and shows Paul's confidence for the Corinthians to deliver. And Paul again flags their credibility in verse 23 by saying how the visitors are apostles of the churches, meaning he is partnered with Paul, acting as an agent representing the gospel. But how do they do that? Well, they are dedicated to the gospel of the glory of Christ. They live their lives in a way that reflects the glory of God. People see what they do, the decisions they make, what they say, and they think there is something different about them. But what is driving them to live this way? Well, it's because of Christ. They seek to glorify Christ in their lives. And why is this important? Well, because they make the invisible God visible. They proclaim the gospel when possible and live in a way which glorifies Christ. So the question is, does your life glorify Christ? And if you don't live life glorifying Christ, for non-Christians, it means they might think Christians are no different. They might not see the hope we have. If they don't see your life as distinctive, it's much harder to witness and show them how Christ has changed you. Well, generosity gets noticed. And can you think of a time when someone was generous to you, be it financially or through hospitality? you tend to remember it as it's rare. As by default, we're selfish and have to make a real conscious effort to be generous. And Paul is boasting in verse 24 about the way these men live their lives for Christ, therefore encouraging the church to spend time with them and try to emulate how they live for the gospel. Well, in relation to the project which requires the funds, Paul is particularly concerned about their giving towards it. God does not say, if you love me, then prove it by giving this, because that's theologically dangerous. Paul is simply looking for generosity as a way of identifying whether God's grace is genuinely at work in them. He wants the church to be accountable to each other, to live in a communal way, to prevent selfish desires from taking over. Knowing our fellow Christians are watching what we do can help us to be responsible in allowing God's grace to work in our lives. If we are generous with our giving and hospitality, then this is not something that we can easily fake, as our giving would then be resented. Paul is looking for them to give to a project which they will see no benefit of. Well, if you think about comic relief, they rely on showing you where the money is going in order to receive donations. But with gospel causes, you may never see where the money goes. When people give to projects for their local church, they expect to witness some kind of return. But Paul is looking for the Corinthians to give to a cause where they will never see a return. And this is where you truly see the invisible work of grace producing works in our lives. So have you grasped God's grace? Well, God, through this text, is encouraging us to see his grace for the gift that it really is. So then in response, we might be willing to give generously to gospel causes that we might never see a return for, and be generously hospitable to someone who will never return the favour. And lastly, why does being generous make a difference? Well, because of the impact it has on the person receiving it. If I receive a generous gift from a person I never met, and I found they did it because something called the gospel changed their lives, then I might want to know what that is. And then the person who received the gift might then come to know Jesus and may be saved. Well, if we think back to London Array, this wind farm east of London, then there might not always be enough wind to power these rotor blades, but they're always there and they're always ready to go. And in chapter 9, verses 1 to 5, Paul is saying, be ready, be organised, be ready to give. He says, be ready with the oar to make God visible through your generosity. And this small section in chapter 9 repeats the theme in chapter 8, and it's all about the people being ready to give. Paul wants the church to be ready to give so that churches in Judea who receive this particular generous gift will praise God, not the Corinthians, and they will look to God as the true source of all giving. Their generous charity brings glory to God and not to ourselves, so how can we respond? Well, we can be ready to give. And Paul starts chapter 9 reminding them of what he has said already. He doesn't repeat himself again, as he's explained in 1 Corinthians what the project is all about. And he is confident that due to their reconciliation, their response will be of abundance. Their giving is a way of showing their authentic repentance to their previous situation. And he is so confident, he says how he has been boasting about it in verse 2, to the Macedonians. He compares them to Achaia, which is the largest western region of Greece, where Corinth is based, saying how this region is ready to give. So at this point, he's really bigging up their giving, and at this point, it'd be very damaging if this ended up being a letdown. And it's hard for Paul to remotely incite people to give due to the culture back then. But this also applies for us now, as the world tells us that money should be earned for myself, for my gratification and my household. So in verse 2, he says that he has tried to stir people into action, and not all of them are willing. And that's because getting people to give generously is tough, and especially for a cause where they might not see any return for their investment. But the question is, do we need to experience a benefit of where our money goes if it's for the gospel? Because of grace and what God has done for us, are we willing to give generously so that we can glorify God? Paul wants the Corinthians to show the invisible work of grace visibly displayed through their giving. And Paul reminds them that he has had confidence in them in verse 3 during the dispute to encourage them further, showing how he has stood by them during their dispute. He wants his confidence to encourage them to get ready to give so that he and the Corinthians won't be ashamed when the Macedonians visit. He doesn't want it to be a hasty last-minute collection, but one that is organised and generous, as this then reflects the priorities and the hearts of the Corinthians and how the gospel has changed them. Jesus gave so generously to us, so we should give generously to him in response. And Paul is concerned further in verse 4 that they won't deliver with their giving. And this could affect the whole project in Judea. So he reminds them in verse 5 that they have pledged to be generous, and they should follow through on this, not simply to avoid shame, but to show thankfulness for what they have received in Christ. Now, the fund was supposed to be a joint project, but if Paul has to beg them, it won't be a testament of love, but of unwillingness. He doesn't want to wait for the giving to be rustled together when Titus gets there, as the key thing isn't so much the act of giving, but the intent behind it. This is his great concern. So giving is not a tax or a burden that weighs us down with guilt. Paul doesn't want them to feel imposed, as generous giving only comes when it's voluntary. By sharing our money with others generously, we bless others materially and spiritually as they look to God in thankful response. And Jesus wants the people to finish what they have promised. We don't want to be people who make promises to act for God's people, but then not to deliver. When it comes to giving, it's not the thought that counts, it's the action. If Paul were writing to our church, is there anything he would say? Are you going to follow through on that good intention? Or maybe he would look at our church growth plans. Would he remind us that we need to follow through on these plans? We need to deliver something. We need to allow for more people to hear the gospel. So what actions will we deliver as a church? Well, what about if Paul were writing to you as an individual Christian? What have you pledged to do but not delivered on? Are you generous with your time, with your money, with your hospitality? Are you willing to deliver generously for God to people you may have never met before? Not because of self-fulfillment, but because of grace. So what could you do? Well, you could give towards maybe mission organisations that we support. You could give your time generously, help your friends. Just do some kind of action and do it generously, so people see you're motivated by the gospel. Help them to see that the gospel is important to you, that it changes you. Well, grace is invisible, but works of grace are visible. Live a distinctive life, be a good witness, and lead others to Christ. Be accountable, be hospitable, be ready to give, and most importantly, be generous. Make our invisible God visible to others. Confess the gospel through generous, selfless giving to glorify God.